Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on quantitative easing when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19. Verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Now, commercial paper are things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and the value of clad coin or currency. And you know, that's very true. When we're dealing with the banks and government and commercial industries, that's true. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus the gold and silver. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew as a matter of law that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us, that's you and I, to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew full well when they did it in 1933 that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property, and to destroy the people's property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and our property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that in our business school, which is now on compact disc for you adult homeschoolers. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. And click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Well, we've been talking about quantitative easing. Now, quantitative easing is a buzzword. It's a spin word for inflation. Now, we've adopted inflation. In fact, Helicopter Ben was named Helicopter Ben because he said that he would not let the American economy slip into a deflationary depression. Well, a deflationary depression is what we had in the 1930s, and it was bad, and I don't deny it. But I would contend that an inflationary depression is going to be 10 times worse than a deflationary depression. Now, that's my personal opinion. You can decide what you want. But it's already been decided for you. You're going to have depression. The only thing we need to be concerned about, will it be deflationary or inflationary? And that's already been decided. It's going to be inflationary. Helicopter Ben said so. Now, I'm just a little fish down here at the bottom of the pond swimming around trying to pick up a few crumbs off the bottom, being a bottom feeder and all, and I'm getting ready for this inflationary depression. I don't know about you, but that's my take on it based upon what I read. And so I set aside this week and I said, let's take a look at quantitative easing because this is what's coming. This is what they're already doing. I mean, they're already telling you this. Brian Williams is telling them. Katie's telling them. Diane. Hell, they're all telling you the same thing. Now, there's an outcome that comes from that. And so I'm reading from a newsletter put out by a guy named Jim Willie. Jim Willie's about as popular in political circles or economic circles as aides at an office Christmas party. But the difference is in 2005 when he said, okay, now here's the policies that we're following and here's the outcome that's going to come from it, he is now writing in September of 2010, he says, okay, it happened. And not because he's so smart, it's because this is the way it happens. You know, 5 follows 4 and precedes 6. So when you start off 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, what comes next? 5. Well, hell, you know, everybody should know that. At least the people in the know should know it. Now, maybe you can't count. But we're at that point in history now where we have already taken the actions. You know, we already decided in 1913 we're going to go with paper money. Well, okay, there's an outcome called deflation or depression. Then we decided we're going to go off gold in 1971 and we're going to go on to fiat paper. Okay, there's an outcome to the... Now, the outcome doesn't come right away. See, when you're out stealing, you don't get caught the very first time. Hell, when you go down to Flo's Warehouse, you don't get gonorrhea the first time you go in there, do you? But if you keep going back to the whorehouse, you know, week after week, the day's going to come when you're going to get VD. Just bank on it. Just take that one to the bank. And same thing is true about flying airplanes. Old instructor of mine said, the family that flies together dies together. Well, just about every time. Not, you know, might be an exception once in a while, but pretty much when an airplane crashes with a family on it, you know, the family that flies together dies together. That's pretty much the case. Now, Jim Woolley goes on and he says this. He says, this article is an attempt to briefly describe what is happening to the United States from an aerial perspective regarding the foremost poorly told events, better description of critical event factors, the lost generation of industry, the official investment by the U.S. government in profound failure, the confusion from broadening collectivism, the absence of a solution toward restructure and remedy, and what actual solution might include. What would you actually do to solve this problem? Now, I heard Bill Clinton, I'll put a little mark right here. Remember Bill Clinton? And he said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to balance the budget. Huh? And so they were telling us here in 1998, 99, 2000, they were balancing the budget. They weren't lying to you. God love them, politicians. I'm telling you, they weren't lying to you. They deceived you, but they didn't lie to you. See, here's the way that came down. Back in 1984, when Social Security went bust, they had to raise the taxes, so they did. And when they raised the taxes, they said, this solves the Social Security problem for 50 years. It didn't. It only solved the problem from 84, 94, 104, 14. It was less than 30 years, about 26, 7 years. And it solved it for about half of 50. But don't you think somebody should have said, well, then what are you going to do at the end of 50 years? You know, then don't you have this problem all over again? Well, we'll let future generations worry about it. What? I mean, my God, you know, that's like going out here and spending on your credit card until you max the thing out and say, well, we'll let somebody else worry about that. Well, okay, I guess if you got somebody else to worry about it, but it would seem like to me to be a more prudent course of action for you to live within your means. Now, we should have been living within our means, and we didn't. And so Social Security went broke. Then we raised the taxes on it, and we took the money from the taxes and balanced our general accounting budget. Then we put pieces of paper called IOUs into the Social Security Trust Fund, and we said, okay, see, Social Security is fully funded with these IOUs. Huh? You got a bunch of 3x5 cards in there that have to be redeemed. Social Security is upside down. Goldman Sachs is upside down. The U.S. government's upside down. All of these big corporations are upside down. We just haven't admitted it yet. And it's coming to the fore. It'll come about. Just like the inflation in Germany. You know, in 1920, it was something we can worry about in the future. But by November of 1923 or 24, hey, here it is. It's right here, and it's in your face. So the guy that's looking ahead 3 or 4 years will be the guy that will be able to weather the storm a little better than the average Joe Sixpack, which is the purpose for telling you here about quantitative easing, because you're not getting the dope. You're not getting the information that you need. That's why the last time I read you this little letter here about John Swinton and the independence of the press. Remember that? This is John Swinton, you know, the guest of honor at the banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. Somebody offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged everybody. He said, there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. Boys and girls, if in 1880 there was no independent press, you mean to tell me that you believe in 2010 there is? I just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, Katie Couric, God love her, she's going to tell you on the 6 o'clock news exactly what her boss tells her to tell you. And the same thing is true here with the President of the United States. He's going to tell you what his boss tells him to tell you. And if he doesn't, he'll get assassinated, you know, just like Kennedy did. All right, going on here, he says, the popular debate once centered on the banks too big to permit to fail, but the debate ended with passage of the Financial Regulation Bill. Only liquidation of the biggest banks can enable a recovery, period. And it's not inflation, boys and girls, that solves the problem. It's liquidation. These too big to fail banks need to be liquidated. We need to go back to gold and silver. There's some changes that we need to make. There's a cause and effect relationship here. When we left just weights and balances back in 1913, we set ourselves on a course that was going to end in destruction. And here it is. Now, the solution is the same solution that we initiated in 1787. It's abandon paper and go back to gold and silver, which is what God told us at Mount Sinai. Now, nobody likes to admit it. You know, when you've made a mistake and it comes back and bites you in the ass, nobody likes to say, hey, listen, I was warned, I was told, and I went ahead and I didn't listen to my teacher, and it came back and bit me in the butt. I guess maybe now it's time to listen to my teacher. That'll be a cold day in hell. That isn't going to happen. You people are never going to admit that you made a mistake, and you're going to plow forward with more paper money. And then when your politicians from Team A come back and say, here's the solution to the problem, and it's painless, you'll buy it. Because that's what you want to hear. I want to hear it's painless. People have been doing that for thousands of years. They ain't changed yet, and ain't about to change now, and they're sure as hell ain't going to change in the future. So make up your mind to it. Now, the rest of us are sitting over here. We're riding on the same ship. When this sucker hits the ice, the ship's going to sink. All of us are going to get our feet wet. And what we need is a little better plan than the average Joe Sixpack. We're all going to get our feet wet, and some of us need to figure a way to stay above the water until a rescue ship comes, until we can survive this. What we're looking for is a survival strategy. So only liquidation of the biggest banks can enable a recovery, period. Of course, the process is complicated, especially politically. Actually, it's more than political, since the big banks share control of the U.S. government. You see the guy that's your Treasury Secretary, this guy named Gaither, Timothy Gaither or Gaither? He is a former employee of Goldman Sachs. That's your problem. Your government is permeated with these bankers. And the bankers are the ones that control the Congress. They're the ones that are passing out all the sugar daddies for the congressmen. They buy these guys, except for Ron Paul and a handful of others. I mean, you're just talking about a bought and paid for Congress. You can forget about political solutions. There hasn't been any in the past, and there's not likely to be one now, and not likely to be one in the future. And then you and I still have to survive this. So let's start using our heads here. Now, the response reaction from gold and silver will give loud messages to reflect systemic failure as money is wasted, invested in failure, and directed to the elite troughs. Now, one can argue that no remedy or restructure is even attempted. It is only feigned to placate the masses. So they're feigning. Everybody in the know knows that this thing is over, past tense. Now, they're feigning, hey, we're going to solve the employment problem. The Republicans aren't going to solve anything any more than the Democrats, and that's because none of them are going to go back to gold and silver coin. Not a one of them. The discussion is never about should we get off of fiat paper and go back to silver, go back to gold. Never, never. It's never even brought up in the conversation. What we're talking about here is what color paper? How much new color paper? That's just adding insult to injury. That doesn't solve your problem. Now, that being the case, then those of us that are out here on the sidelines watching this charade go by need to do something constructive. Now, actually, there's more money made in depressions than there is in boom times. And this is a great opportunity for all of us. And I call myself a guerrilla capitalist. Guerrilla capitalist. I'm just talking to a guerrilla capitalist today. He lives down in Georgia. And he called me today on another matter. And I said, well, how are you doing down there? And he said, oh, I'm doing pretty good. I said, have you got your survival place picked out? Have you read Skousen's book on strategic relocation? Yep, I have. He said, no, I haven't moved yet. He's planning to move up to Tennessee, get up in the mountains. And he said, no, I haven't done that yet. I'm still down here in Georgia. I said, well, time's marching on, you know. He said, yeah, I know that. He said, but I'm making so much money down here now that I hate to pack up and move. And I told him, I said, now, you know, you can make money. You don't have to be there in Atlanta, Georgia to make money. It just so happens that as a guerrilla capitalist, you're just making money hand over fist down there. Now, here, times are bad, and the unemployment rate's 10%, and here's this guy, he's just out here making money and just having a great time. I said, you know, you need to be planning on getting on the ARC here at some point in time. Then I pointed out to him, I said, do you remember that series of programs I did on EMP, One Second After? And he said, no, I don't think I heard that. I said, well, go back in the archives there. It's, I think it was this year or sometime last year. I did a program here on a story called EMP, One Second After. I said, the Russians are going to blow up an EMP bomb, and then they're going to knock out all of our electric grid, knock out all of our computers, and you're going to get caught down there in Georgia, and you're going to have to walk out of there. And well, you ain't going to ride. You're going to walk. He said, well, maybe I better get to that. You know, there's a time and then a place to take action. You can wait too long. And you have to act at least reasonably. Because if you don't, well, then you're going to get caught like all the people got caught outside the ark. You know, they needed to build an ark just like Noah. Or they needed to come up and make an alliance with Noah, and none of them did that. And there just came a point in time when the doors closed and you guys are out. So put that one away in your heart. Now, the real story behind four failures. You know, the Bear Stearns episode was the prelude to the failure story. Bear Stearns was the opening act. The clue for the death of the United States banking sector was with Bear Stearns. The Bear Stearns story was a mere partial truth, one that avoided all of the inner circle rivalries and the nasty relationships. The firm did not participate in the general rescue program for the long-term capital management company back in 1988, and because they wouldn't participate with the rest of the sharks, Bear Stearns was singled out for execution a kill at a later date. So the Bear Stearns failure was a bold execution for its long gold position and its short U.S. dollar position. That's if the truth were told. Wall Street never benefits from straight talk. Wall Street benefits from deception, and they use deception as their calling card. The gold price was prevented from finding a much higher legitimate value with continued control when Bear Stearns was removed from the clique. Now, the American International Group, do you remember that AIG insurance company, the one that we now have $180 billion worth of their worthless paper? And get this, the AIG bailout is going to cost more than $1 trillion by the time it's all said and done. And the Fannie Mae and the Freddie Mac bailout is going to cost somewhere, and I don't know what the total number is going to be, but it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 trillion. And that assumes that two-thirds of the loans that are out there are good. I don't know that two-thirds of them are good. And if only a third of them are good, well, then you're on the hook for $10 trillion. It's not likely that all of the loans are no good. So I don't think it's going to be a total loss, but it's going to be a big one. And as I mentioned in the last program, I said, you know, we went out and we've been put on the hook here for $28.1 trillion. Now they're telling us, oh, no, it's three-quarters of a trillion? No, no. Government lies to you all the time. And God love them, you know, the people at Bloomberg News, they took a look and said, let's add up all of these programs, and the answer is $12.8 trillion plus Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Now, those are guaranteed. The government had an implicit guarantee. Now they have an explicit guarantee. We're going to cover it all. The United States government has nationalized all the mortgages in the country. That's the bottom line. And that's 15.3 for a total of 28.1 trillion. Now, those are the real numbers. Nobody out there in media land is telling you where the real numbers are. These numbers are so big and so scary that, you know, little guys like us, you know, can't even count that high without taking our shoes off. Now, I'm riding on the same great ship America that you and everybody else is on, but I'm taking a little different tack. You know, when my captain says, we're looking for green shoots and everything's fine, you know, I'm sitting here looking for icebergs. I'm over here figuring a way to get off this ship. I don't mind getting my feet wet, but I'd kind of like to live through this if I could. No, I'm not looking for green shoots here, boys and girls. I'm looking for icebergs. Now, the popular debate once centered on the banks that were too big for failure. But now that we've gone through these relationships, the firm that didn't participate was Bear Stearns, and they were singled out, and they were destroyed. Now, there was a reason for that destruction. And the American International Group episode was disguised from its true nature as a Goldman Sachs bailout. In fact, the debate has been somewhat clear that the AIG nationalization enabled Goldman Sachs to be the first in line for the credit default contract redemptions at full price. So Goldman Sachs saved $11 billion in the nationalization and by butting into line. There are advantages to acting as the U.S. Department of the Treasury's administrator. Many other big banks had favorable redemptions on similar insurance contracts. So the wreckage of the entire U.S. banking sector has thus covered up, and was covered up, from the insurance perspective, preventing a credit derivative blow-up. The gold price did not react from a systemic failure motive as much as a perceived systemic risk motive. The over $100 billion in covered losses to AIG so far is just the beginning of investment in failure. The U.S. government is managing the credit derivatives from under its broken wing, but gold does react to the waste of money, the debasement of money, and not so much from inflation dispersed through the system. That will come later. Now, here's the way this deal comes down. Goldman Sachs buys some securities. Then they go to AIG and they say, well, we got $11 billion worth of securities here, and we want to buy an insurance contract so that if this company goes bankrupt, let's call it General Motors or whatever, or the state of California, we want you to pay us. And so the AIG insurance company says, well, sure, we'll sell you $11 billion worth of insurance coverage, and we'll charge you, let's say, $50 million, whatever the premium value they determine is worth. And then they do that. Well, then Bank of America does the same thing, and so does all the other companies out there. Everything's great, as long as nobody's collecting. You know, selling insurance contracts on automobiles is great business until somebody has a wreck. Now we got a claim. Well, when Bear Stearns went upside down, there was a claim. And AIG couldn't pay it. That was the problem. And because AIG couldn't pay, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, they went to the government and they said, hey, you got to bail AIG out. Why? You and I, boys and girls, never had a nickel's worth of business with any of them. I didn't give a rat's rectum whether they floated or didn't. But you know, if I had some bonds, let's say with Bear Stearns, or I had stock in Bear Stearns, and I'd be real concerned too. I'd say, yeah, bail them out, save me. And so Congress did. You know, they get paid handsomely from these Wall Street banks. So they went out there and they bailed those banks out. They bailed out AIG, but the purpose wasn't to save AIG. That was collateral. The purpose was to save the losses to the big mega banks. And furthermore, it wasn't just the mega banks in the United States. It was mega banks around the world. For instance, it was Credit Suisse in Switzerland, and it was Deutsche Bank in Germany. So they did, and they got the taxpayers to do that. Now, I don't see any reason for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife to bail out Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, or Goldman Sachs, or AIG, or anybody else. But, you know, the powers that be said, hey, that's the way this has got to be played out. And so that's the way they played it. Now, did Katie Couric report that to you? I trow not. But Jim Woolley did, and Bob Chapman did. Now, the newsletter writers that everybody ignores are the newsletter writers that I promote. And I do that about every quarter. I'll do a series of programs here on the economy on some aspect, you know, of the money system, the banking system. And I do that for the purpose of educating you so that you'll know, well, here's where the straight skinny lies. I don't care whether you buy their newsletter or not. I don't get paid anything for promoting Jim Woolley. Never met him, don't know him, never talked to him. I read his papers from time to time, and I take them off the internet. And these papers are free. Now, you can subscribe, and you'll get more and better information. But hell, even if you take the freebies, it'll be 10 times more than you're ever going to get from Katie Couric. It probably won't be enough to save you, but it'll be a hell of a lot more than you're going to get from Katie Couric. And then when the ship sinks and you're in the water and you're drowning, at least you'll know why you're drowning. I think it would be a tragedy for the ship to sink and you're in here drowning and then wondering, what in the hell happened? Well, the ship sank. Well, yeah, you can figure that out. Why did the ship sink? It was torpedoed. Why? Well, because there was economic reasons for torpedoing it. And we're just sorry as hell that you passengers are going to die out here in the middle of the ocean. It really didn't have anything to do with you. It just had to do with business. Nothing personal, just business. So the wreckage of the entire banking system is coming. There's nothing going to save this. It's already cast in cement. It isn't going to happen today, tomorrow, or next week, but it's coming. They've postponed it. They took $28 trillion to postpone the inevitable. So now you're going to have a ship sunk to the bottom, and it cost you $28 trillion to sink it. You could have let the damn ship sink free. You didn't have to pay $28 trillion to sink the ship. Hell, it was going to sink anyway. The tragedy of this is that you're on the hook for this $28 trillion, and you're sitting there saying, well, I won't pay it. Oh, yeah, you will. Oh, boys and girls, wake up and smell the coffee. You people are paying it through inflation. Inflation is a tax. The 7% that you're losing in purchasing power, let me show you where the 7% is. You've got some money in your 401k, and you put it in there last year. And last year's dollars are worth 7% less this year than they were last year. You've already paid a 7% tax. You didn't have to put that on your tax return or admit it or anything else. It's what we call the stealth tax. Stealth tax. Now, let me show you a little trick here to the stealth tax. They've been telling you buy stocks and bonds, and that's why you're investing for the long haul in your 401k. All right, now watch this. This is for the masses. This is for those people that can't add, can't subtract, can't multiply, and can't divide. God love them. You know, I'm not opposed to them. I'm just sitting here saying, you know, these poor guys, they don't know what the hell's happening to them. Let me explain it. 1960, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it was, you know, the blue chip stock to buy. And if you bought the Dow Jones Industrials in 1960, held them until 2000, and sold them, you made 5% profit, compounded every year for 40 years. Your $10,000 grew to $73,000. God, that's wonderful. That's genius. Everybody told you, look how smart you are. At the very same time, the inflation rate was 4.7%, and the capital gain tax was 28%. So when you take 4.7% off of the 5%, you've got 0.3% compounded, and when you got through paying your capital gain tax, your $10,000 shrunk to $6,200. You had a net loss in purchasing power of $3,800. So you invested your $10,000, paid your taxes every year, did all those things that boys and girls are supposed to do, and when you got through, you lost $3,800. That's the net results of practicing unjust weights and balances in violation of thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Now, that isn't going to stop anybody, and I don't intend to persuade you that you should stop investing in your 401k, but you're going to lose it all. Well, not quite all. You're going to lose about 90% of it. That's what the historical average is, 90%. Now, insofar as purchasing power with U.S. dollars from 1930 to today, you've already lost 98%. You're only arguing over the last two pennies. How much of the last two pennies are you going to lose? Not all of it, but probably about 90% of it. That's the historical norm. All right, here we are. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the Jim Willey newsletter, at least for openers here, and we're talking about the quantitative easing that's going on in America right now. Quantitative easing is simply a buzzword. It is a spin. It is a lie. It is a deception for inflation. Now, inflation's bad, but it's going to get a whole lot worse. And government is going to pay all of their debts with these inflated dollars. Everybody's going to get paid, 100 cents on the dollar. But then when you take those dollars down to the Walmart store to convert those into goods off the shelf, you're going to get nothing. You're going to stand in line and share the shortage because it's going to be a ration. And the reason we know that that's coming is because that's the historical norm from the past. And he who fails to learn from the past or learn from history is doomed to repeat its mistakes. And that's the way the real world works. So let's see if we can learn how to avoid these mistakes. And if we could learn how to avoid the mistakes, I think we'd be in fat sitting. All right, now the Fannie Mae episode was one that is best described as averting either a mortgage bond default or a severe jump in mortgage rates. The sewage treatment plant walls were contained in pulling off this nationalization of the mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Wall Street controllers thus placated a crucial, angry mortgage creditor, China. China had been selling all summer long in 2008. They were selling their Fannie Mae and other GSE bonds. China forced the U.S. government's hand on its guarantee as a result of nationalization. Now, rumors had been flying in late 2007 and early 2008 that China was accumulating U.S. agency mortgage bonds as part of some contract toward colonization. Well, if that's true, it's not going on anymore. China now owns zero such mortgage bonds anymore, and the U.S. government guarantee was implicit but soon was made to be explicit. The 170-odd billion in covered Fannie Mae losses so far is just the beginning of investment in failure. But gold does react to the waste of money and the debasement of money, and not so much from inflation dispersed throughout the system. That comes later. Now, we heard that little story before, didn't we? That comes later. Now, we still have a little bit of time left, and as long as there's a little bit of time left, it's the time that you want to take to make some kind of positive action. If you don't, then you'll be left to react to events that are going to come down on us in the future that we can't accurately predict. So being prepared then has to do with, do I want to have all of my money tied up in my 401k or in my house? Or should I have my money in gold or silver? Or should I have it in wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil? How much debt should I have? These are questions, you know, should I buy a new car this year? Should I buy a house this year? Should I buy this house on credit? Should I buy this car on time? These are decisions that we have to make, and, you know, we're all going to make them from one point of view or another. And a question arises, should I do this? What's going to happen if I do? What's going to happen when I lose my job? Which, for about 60% of us, that's about where it's going to be. Now, I use the number 62%. Let me tell you why. Back about 2003, we had an international default. It was in Argentina. Nice guys. I want to point out that Argentina in 1937 had the fifth largest economy in the world. Today, they're somewhere that we can't find. I mean, they're about 100 or 150 or something like that. Lots of natural resources, good country, good real estate, everything's fine. They're in control of the bankers. You know, the bankers have control of their country. And then they go through these inflationary collapses pretty often, you know, about once every 20 years or sometimes less. Now, we call these banana republics, and that's because the bankers are in control of them, and the people are ignorant, and they don't know what the hell to do next. They're all Catholics, primarily. And so they just do what the Pope tells them and what the bankers tell them, and when it's all said and done, they just live in abject poverty supporting this aristocracy at the top, the clergy and the aristocracy of the banking interests. Well, okay, what if you wanted to get off that treadmill? Well, Argentina in 2003, they failed to make their payments to the bankers. And as a result of that, their economy collapsed and they had a 62% unemployment rate. It was a race to the bottom. Here's the way this works. I mentioned to you yesterday that there was a case where the Mott Company up in New York, paying $20 an hour to their employees, union employees, the contract runs out. And so the company says, why don't you boys take a $1.50 cut on our next contract? We'll sign a contract, but we'll only pay $18.50. And the union said, hell no, we won't go. And so the Mott people, the management, they said, okay, well, in the local area, the average wage is $9.89. We can hire forklift drivers for $9.89. So they did. They went out and they paid $10 an hour to these scabs, and the scabs came and they got 300 of them, learning how to do the jobs of the 300 former union workers. And I said, now, there's an example of the race to the bottom. Now, you can understand the discouragement on the part of the union members. I don't deny that. $20 an hour is probably a fair wage here in the United States. But boys and girls, you got 10% of the workforce already out of work. And that 10%, to them, $18.50 looks like a fortune. In fact, $10 looks damn good when you don't have anything else. So that's where you're at, and that's where the Argentines were. Now watch this. Now that the Mott people have these people for 10 bucks, when somebody comes up and says, this guy that you're paying 10 bucks to drive that forklift, I'll do it for 8. And then he displaces the $10 man, and now $8 is the new level. And the next guy comes along and says, I'll do it for 6. Next guy says, I'll do it for 4. Next guy says, I'll do it for 2. When you got 62% of the people unemployed, $2 looks like a fortune. $4 is even better. So that's what this race to the bottom is all about. Now that the unemployment is well established, man, boys and girls, it ain't 9%. It's 28%. I told you that last time. I mean, we're talking about humongous numbers. We're talking about numbers on a par with 1935 and the Great Depression already. And we're only in this thing 2 years, and it takes 3.5 years for it to reach the bottom. That's what happened in 1929 to 33. 3.5 years. We haven't even got to the bottom yet. So that's why I thought I'd bring this to your attention and say, hey, wait a minute. While we still have 1.5 years to get to the bottom, maybe we should be thinking about how do we get off this thing? You know, before you get your feet wet, let's start thinking in rational terms. I know you don't like to face reality, and you don't like to think of America going into bankruptcy and national captivity, but that's in the bag. And your public servants, your leaders, your political leaders have already said this is what we're going to do. They've already said this ship is already on automatic pilot. Even if you change to Team B in November, it isn't going to save the ship. It's a done deal. If you were going to save this ship, you had to go clear back to 1979. It could have been done. It could have been done. And the Figge Group figured out the way to do it. And they said, but we got to take action now in the Reagan administration in the 1980s. Hell, we not only didn't take action, we exacerbated the problem by increasing spending and increasing debt. And I guess we figured if this party is this good with this amount of debt, can you imagine how much fun we're going to have at this party if we can double the debt? And we did. Now, Lehman Brothers was an unwilling sacrificial lamb. for its prominence in the mortgage arena. They were a chess piece that just got in the way. The Lehman kill job created a desktop. It was a distraction in which J.P. Morgan was funded $138 billion in a grand reload with the U.S. government to maintain its commodity stranglehold. Now, that came during the Saturday morning bankruptcy hearing, where funds supposedly covered Lehman private accounts. J.P. Morgan was running low on funds to defend the shaky system. So, Lehman Brothers owned a significant silver position that had gone out of control, in danger of being the object of a critical short covering event certain to render huge damage to J.P. Morgan. So J.P. Morgan took it over and assumed its responsibility. So if you're wondering today why silver is only $19 an ounce and gold is $12.50, it's because it's being manipulated and controlled. And J.P. Morgan is the company that's responsible for that. So right now today, gold and silver run at around 64 to 1. That's the ratio. The correct ratio is 16 to 1. This thing is out of balance, and it's out of balance in a big way. And one of these days, the rubber band's going to break. You can stretch it and stretch it and stretch it, but at some point in time, it'll break. I don't know where. I don't know. Is it 64 to 1, 68 to 1, 70 to 1? I don't know. But at any point in time, it's going to break. And then when it does, there are going to be economic repercussions, and there's going to be great benefits, which is why we suggest here that you be long silver and short gold. And, you know, if I'm telling my student, you know, here in the class, he says, well, Mr. Gordon, should I buy gold or silver? I tell him, first of all, have you got a four-year supply of food? Because if you don't have a four-year supply of food, son, the gold and silver may not, I'm not telling you that it won't, it may not buy that food that you're looking for on the shelf in the future. So you might want to tuck that one away in your heart. Now, would you want to be long silver or long gold? You'd want to be long silver at this juncture of time because an ounce of gold converted to silver at 64 to 1 will sell at 16 to 1 and deliver 4 ounces of gold for every ounce of gold that you convert to silver today. So the logical arbitrage move today is silver, not gold. And I know for the average Joe Sixpack that probably don't mean much, but Franklin Sanders has a textbook on arbitrage. And I think that, you know, if you've got a few extra nickels to rub together, the logical thing to do is to get the hell out of bonds and out of dollars and out of fiat paper and get into something more intelligent. Just looking back over the last 10 years, gold produces a 15% a year return. Paper produces a 10% a year loss. What do you want, losses or profits? Now, the 15% profit doesn't keep up with inflation. If you were to ask me, well, how have you done with your gold? I've lost money on gold. You know, if you're buying gold at $800 an ounce in 1980, and today it was $850, as I recall, in 1980, and today that same gold is worth $1,250. Inflation doubled from 1980 to 2000 and went up another 30% from 2000 to 2007. I mean, you'd have to have gold priced at $2,200 an ounce just to keep up with the purchasing power. And so tuck that one away in your heart. So one of the first things we do here in business school is say, look, let's get you off of nominal values, that is these numbers after the dollar sign, and let's look at your purchasing power. You guys are taking it in the shorts here. Your standard of living is going down. You're making more money than you ever made in your life and living poorer as a result of it. Is it a deception? God, it's a genius deception. Genius. Give credit where credit's due. So J.P. Morgan took it over, and they took over Lehman Brothers, and they assumed its responsibility. They drove the silver price down from $19 to $10 in the ensuing months with no objection, no criticism, not even suspicion of impropriety from the regulators or the legal authorities. Hell, they own them. Nobody residing in South Manhattan had any complaints about J.P. Morgan taking over Lehman Brothers and driving the price of silver down to $10 an ounce. Hedge fund positions were targeted effectively. However, the silver price returned to the same $20 level, which it will easily overcome and penetrate in the next few months. Smart investors bought the silver offered at these discounted prices of $10 for several consecutive months. Yep, that's right. And they took physical delivery. Tuck that one away in your heart. If you've got a piece of paper that says you've got some silver over here in the vault, don't you believe it. Silver has been sold into the future 15 years. 15 years. And it's what we call paper. These are paper certificates. And there was a heavy hitter. When we talk about heavy hitters, we're talking about people with millions, maybe billions. He's from somewhere in the Middle East. I'm guessing he's an Arabian sheikh. Well, he had a gold position in the Bank of Nova Scotia. That's up in Canada. And so he goes tripping up there to Nova Scotia, and he says, hey, let me into the vault. Let me see my gold. And so they took him into the vault, and they showed him the gold. He says, how much gold is in here? And they told him. And he says, is that all you got? Is this the vault, or have you got another vault? And he said, no, this is the vault. This is all the gold. And he says, I have more gold than that in here. Now, we don't know what the repercussions are. What would you do if you went into your vault and you know, you got 100,000 ounces on your piece of paper, and they say, here's the vault, and there's 10, 15, or 20,000 ounces in there. And you say, hell, I've got more than that in here. Here's the kicker. When you buy this paper gold, you have to pay for the storage. So you're paying for the storage of 100,000 ounces, and they got 20,000 in there. And they've got 100, 200, 500 other customers that are all claiming that same pile of gold or silver. And then you've got it insured. You're paying insurance and storage fees on gold that isn't in there. Because you got a piece of paper? Hell, you know, if three of you guys went in there at the same time and said, hey, pay us off, they couldn't do it. Wake up and smell the coffee. You know, they used to have a saying, short bankers are hung from tall trees. I wouldn't doubt but what that'll happen again. Because there's going to be a lot of short bankers. Now, that doesn't do anything for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Get your money to hell out of the banks. Come on, wake up, smell the coffee here. And get hold of your assets and put them in front of you. What have you got? What have you got? Not how much do you have in somebody else's warehouse that they've got. Because when you go over there and knock on the door, when the run comes, you're not going to get any more out of there than anybody else. Probably nothing. Yeah, you can sue. And what are you going to collect over 10 years suing a bankrupt company that's already ripped you off? You're going to get nothing and spend a lot of time, effort, and energy working on it. And the time to save yourself is right now. What's yours is yours. Get it out. Get it in front of you. Count it so that you know how much you get. That's what the bottom line is. All right, we're talking about quantitative easing. What we're talking here is the newsletter from the goldenjackass.com. Got that? Goldenjackass.com, Jim Willie, CB. And you're looking for the September 1st, 2010. It's a freebie. Just download it and read it. Or as they say at the Blue Room, read them and weep. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.